Hello and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper, bringing you news from the Wallingford Herald for today, Wednesday the 2nd of September 2026. Unfortunately, I have to report that we're a couple of volunteers short this week, and so this week's reading is being done by Kay and myself, David, also acting as producer. Copier this week is Roger. So with no more ado, we'll begin.
The first item on the front page is Town Ready to Party for Bunkfest. Bunkfest volunteers to get accolade for efforts. A much-loved free music festival takes over Wallingford this weekend for the biggest and best event yet, with volunteers to receive a prestigious award for their efforts. Bunkfest is the event of the year in Wallingford's calendar, bringing the people together from across Oxfordshire and beyond for a weekend of free music and fun in green spaces and venues across the town from Friday to Sunday. An army of more than 700 volunteers are involved in helping organise and run the 10,000-person event. This year, the volunteers will take centre stage themselves as they're invited to the main stage on Sunday afternoon for the presentation of the King's Award for Voluntary Service by the Lord Lieutenant of Oxford, which was awarded to the festival team for its incredible community impact. Founded 22 years ago as a folk music festival in the Cross Keys pub, the event has now expanded beyond the confines of the Kinecroft Park and will take place on the Bullcroft Green Space too. Bigger stages, a bigger lineup, and even more music will see around 170 acts performing in the festival fringe over the weekend, spanning genres from jazz to Afrobeat, pop, rock and indie to soul and reggae, and choir performances to acoustic singer-songwriters. They'll be performing in the open air on the Kinecroft, headlined by the delicate sound of Pink Floyd, in tribute to Pink Floyd on Friday, by Dr. Feelgood on Saturday, and Blue Water Giants on Sunday, and a whole host of other acts will take to the stage in pubs, bars, restaurants, and other venues across the town. Each year, the free festival is organised by a dedicated team of directors, led by Chairman Colin Dalton, the last surviving founder member of the festival, who hosted the first event alongside Bob Wyatt, Dave Newson, and Joe Simmons in 2002. Mr. Dalton said, "It used to take about 3 days to set up, and it now takes 2 weeks. It's got that big." The event raises thousands in donations for local charitable causes each year and gives businesses a boost with a huge number of patrons over the weekend. Mr. Dalton added, "We want to make sure as many volunteers as possible are in front of the main stage to be part of the presentation. We want it to be about them." This year, it is so important to thank the volunteers that can turn up, whether they do one shift behind the bar or take a week off work. Every person is a part of the jigsaw that makes it work. My feeling is, what a great volunteer organisation we are. The town absolutely love it, and we're really proud to put it on.
Fury over Ridgeway diversion plan. This is also an item from showing on the front page. Outrage has followed a householder's plans to divert a UK national walking trail because they're fed up of walkers, runners and dog owners using the path through their land. Oxfordshire County Council, is hosting a public consultation on a proposal to divert the Ridgeway National Trail in the Chilterns around Fairway House in Nuffield near Wallingford. The path, which stretches 87 miles from Avebury in Wiltshire to Ivinghoe Beacon in Buckinghamshire, currently runs across the parking and turning area of Fairway House, between the house and the garage. Oxfordshire County Council explained the householder's point of view in a statement and said they added a hedge between the house and the garage and a pedestrian gate to maintain privacy while providing access directly onto the footpath. The statement said, "The amount of path the users has increased since the owners moved in, and although they support wider public access, the impact on their private life is now noticeable. The driveway is used by delivery drivers, which presents risks to both walkers and children. Groups of runners especially lead to the owners' concerns, as there are public running events who use the path when 100 runners or more come directly by and one member of their family has been knocked over by a runner. Items have been stolen from their garage, dog waste bags left, and some walkers' dogs allowed to roam freely within their curtilage. To address the above issues, the owners want to move the path to the opposite side of their garage to ensure they have privacy and security within the main property, which they can then fence off from the diverted path. If diverted, the new path would be 70 metres rather than 58 metres long and have no gates. The charity dedicated to protecting and promoting the trail, Friends of the Ridgeway, submitted a strong objection to the proposal, claiming the move would set a damaging precedent for public rights of way. It said planning permission granted to build two new significantly larger homes on the site in 2017 specified that the path would be retained, and the claims made by the homeowner of theft, injury and dog fouling are anecdotal and unsupported. The homeowner would have been aware of the footpath when he bought the property, the objection said, and it is not credible to argue that the route has become inconvenient when it was an established feature at the point of purchase. The charity said runners referred to could only be the Race to the Stones, an annual event since 2013, and there is no evidence for increased use of the trail. Friends of Ridgeway said if the proposal is approved, it would set an unacceptable precedent for other landowners to seek diversions for personal reasons such as privacy or security. Privacy is not a justification for moving a public footpath or national trail. The landowner has not given evidence to say the security of their property is at risk, as the current proposal is based on the landowner's personal inconvenience. If permission is granted, it would risk undermining local and national policy protections for rights of way. And there are one or two accompanying photographs illustrating the route of the path through the property.
Minister to cycle for struggling families. A church minister is taking on a 330-kilometre cycling challenge to help families break free from debt. Gareth Lloyd-Jones from Ridgeway Community Church in Wallingford aims to raise £3,000 for Christians Against Poverty, otherwise known as CAP, a charity that offers free face-to-face debt advice and budgeting support through partner churches. The funds raised could help around 16 families in poverty access a debt relief order and become debt-free. Mr. Lloyd-Jones said, "We see people's financial struggles firsthand, and it's heartbreaking to witness. For those who are already struggling to make ends meet, Just one unexpected bill can start a cycle of debt that's incredibly hard to break. People trapped in debt are often alone, afraid, and unsure of who to turn to. Our churches partner with CAP to help the people in our community find financial freedom, offering them a way out of debt and a new sense of hope. We're raising money for CAP because no one should have to face that fear alone. The cycle ride will begin in Wallingford at 8 a.m. during the week commencing September the 21st and will finish at the CAP Support Hub in Bradford by 2 p.m. the following day.
A further item from the front page: concerns raised over regular biker meet at cafe. And inside the paper, concerns over noisy long-running meet. Police has raised concerns against noisy motorcyclists gathering at Bikers Cafe. H Cafe in Oxford Road, Beaconsfield, has hosted one of the county's most popular meets for motorcyclists every Monday during the summer for the last 15 years. But last month, Thames Valley Police issued a notice describing numerous reports of excessive speed, aggressive riding behaviour, and noise from the people who live near the cafe, especially on Monday evenings during biker meets. Now the row has continued, with the police force issuing a second notice addressing concerns reported to them by residents. The force said, "We understand the impact that repeated noise and concerns about riding behaviour can have on those living near these routes, particularly during periods of high motorcycle attendance and Monday bike nights." Thames Valley Police continues to receive reports from residents affected by motorcycle activity in the area. At the same time, we want to acknowledge that the vast majority of motorcyclists visiting H Cafe and riding through South Oxfordshire do so safely, legally, and respectfully. H Cafe is a well-established destination for riders, and we do not wish to discourage responsible motorcycling. The spokesperson added that officers are conducting targeted patrols around the cafe, speaking directly with riders to give out road safety advice, using enforcement tactics for issues like speeding, gathering intelligence related to the complaints, and using specialist tactics like deploying drones where proportionate and necessary. Police said a false equivalence is often made between speed and noise, as reports often say the motorcycles must be speeding because they sound loud, but this is not necessarily correct. Shortly before the season opened for the weekly bike nights at H Cafe at the end of March this year, long-time owner Richard Allen issued a statement. He wrote, "Last season, a small number of thoughtless individuals caused problems at our Monday meets with antisocial behaviour and reckless riding. Their actions put people at risk and damaged the reputation of our cafe and community and threatened the jobs of my amazing staff. This season, there will be zero tolerance for this behaviour." And there is a large photo showing a gathering of a large number of motorcyclists outside the H Cafe. And finally, from the front page, PC killers to stay in jail. And this is followed inside by "No early release for heroes killers." The killers of a South Oxfordshire police officer who were controversially set to be released early are to remain behind bars. Albert Bowers and Jesse Cole, who were involved in the death of Police Constable Andrew Harper, were to be released later this year, halfway through their sentences. The plan caused widespread outrage across the county and beyond, and now the new Prime Minister Andy Burnham has intervened to stop it from happening. He had ordered a review of the changes to the Sentencing Act, which is being undertaken by Justice Secretary Alex Norris and is set to be published when Parliament returns from summer recess this week. He said, "We will now not only be keeping offenders serving time for indecent assault locked up, but also those in prison for manslaughter and death by dangerous driving. This means that the awful criminals responsible for the killing of PC Andrew Harper will not have their sentence shortened." The police officer and Wallingford local was killed in 2019 while responding to reports of a theft of a quad bike in Salmonstead, Berkshire. The 28-year-old suffered catastrophic injuries after being dragged down a country road behind a car containing three teenagers attempting to flee the scene. Henry Long, Mr. Cole and Mr. Bowers was subsequently jailed for the manslaughter of the police officer, but it had seemed that following the Sentencing Act 2026, which was passed to reduce prison overcrowding, the latter two were to be released early. Thousands of people shared messages of support and attended events opposing the decision, and more than 1 million people signed a petition calling for the killers to serve out their full sentences. The widow of PC Harper, Lise Harper, criticised the early release scheme as deplorable. She said, "We speak of justice, accountability and standing with victims, yet decisions like this do the opposite." Meanwhile, his mother, Debbie Adlam, told BBC Radio 4's Today programme that it was another letdown for Andrew. Earlier this month, Chief Constable Jason Hogg joined other police and enforcement leaders in signing an open letter to the Prime Minister asking him to consider all lawful avenues for Cole and Bowers to remain in jail. "This has always been about more than a single case," Mr. Hogg said. "It has become a discussion about justice, public confidence, and how, as a society, we recognise the service and sacrifice of emergency workers who put themselves in harm's way to protect others, as well as the impact the early release of offenders inevitably has on victims." Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who lives just outside of Wallingford with his family, was another of those rallying against the early release, calling it utterly incredible in a column for the Daily Mail. So we're following up on the main news items with a succession of items from the Didcot Railway Centre. And the first is train drivers' descendants at Heritage Centre. Didcot Railway Centre enjoyed a visit from descendants of Jim Hurst, the first engine driver on the Great Western Railway. 27 family members arrived at the Steam Rail Centre from different parts of the world to see the Firefly locomotive, a replica of the 1840 design which Mr. Hurst would have driven early in his career. Four family members gathered on the footplate of the Firefly: Jim Hurst, a great-great-great-grandson, and four great-great-great-great-grandchildren, Dominic, Francine, Michelle and Chris. All 27 family members who visited the Steam Rail Heritage Centre earlier this month were pictured in front of the Pendennis Castle locomotive by Frank Dumbleton, a volunteer at the centre who is also a photographer. Jim Hurst was born in 1811 near Manchester, and aged 14, he assisted his father and George Stevenson in surveying the route for the Liverpool and Manchester Railway. When that railway opened in 1830, he became an engine driver for the company until offered a job by Daniel Gooch, who in 1837 had been appointed locomotive superintendent for the Great Western Railway. Jim Hurst died in 1892. And this little article is accompanied by a picture of descendants of Jim Hurst at their visit to the Didcot Railway Centre.
Flying Scotsman to steam through county. World-famous steam locomotive, the Flying Scotsman, will travel through Oxfordshire later this year. The engine will haul passenger trips from Didcot Parkway on October the 17th and 18th as part of its newly announced 2026 programme. Each journey will cover a 133-mile route through scenic countryside and historic railway towns, including Newbury, Reading, Westbury and Swindon. Oliver Edwards, director and general manager of Fox and Edwards Events, said Flying Scotsman is returning to the main line with a fitting programme for this impressive locomotive. We are proud to present these journeys in October, bringing the engine to new destinations. The mainline return has been organised by Fox and Edwards Events in partnership with 22 heritage lines and in collaboration with Northern Steam, Vintage Trains and the National Railway Museum. First class and traditional seating options are available with return tickets at £99. And there is a photograph of the Flying Scotsman when it was at Didcot Railway Station in May 2025 with, as you can imagine, a great crowd of people all taking photographs and looking at the engine.
Search for new manager at museum is set to start. The search for the new manager of the county's leading rail museum is set to begin next month after the previous head resigned 6 months ago amid a change in governance. After 5 years as chief executive of Didcot Railway Centre, Clive Hetherington stood down on January the 22nd, citing a change in governance. Now, over half a year on, Richard Varley, chair of the Great Western Society, which runs Didcot Railway Centre, said the search for a new museum manager will begin next month. He said, "We will be advertising in September for the post of a museum manager to oversee the Living Railway Museum and drive forward the business plan that will ensure the financial sustainability of Didcot Railway Centre long into the future." The museum is next to Didcot Parkway and attracts thousands of visitors every year, with attendees able to enjoy a ride on the centre's steam locomotives, visit the large engine shed, and call in at the cafe, museum and shop. Mr. Hetherington left the organisation following the change in governance, which he said would have prevented him from delivering an agreed 5-year plan, which he believes is vital to the charity's success. He added that he was deeply disappointed to have left. Speaking in the immediate aftermath of the resignation of Mr. Hetherington, Didcot Railway Centre said interim arrangements had been put in place. And there is a picture of Mr. Hetherington at the Didcot Railway Centre.
New menu and events at Cafe Bar. A cafe bar is being transformed into a cultural hub with evening events and a new menu. Cornerstone Arts Centre in Didcot has announced a summer revamp of its cafe bar, which will introduce a fresh menu, extended opening hours, and a programme of evening activities designed to foster community and creativity. From September the 14th, the cafe bar will remain open until 8:30 p.m. Monday to Saturday and will host a broader range of events. Georgina Heritage, Cabinet Member for Communities at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "I'm really excited about this work. A huge amount of thought and planning has gone into the vision for Cornerstone to become the cultural living room for Didcot. A welcoming space where people can meet friends, settle down with a book, work over coffee, or stay for a drink after a performance. We want it to feel like a place you can make your own. The changes will support Didcot's thriving music scene, enabling the venue to champion more musicians and create further opportunities for artists to share their work, with monthly open mic nights and its popular music box, open decks and record shop. Cornerstone also aims to introduce evening events, including book clubs, writing groups, board game clubs, and talks are being explored. The project will include the introduction of new maker spaces, where visitors can view and purchase work by local artists and independent makers. Road set to close for a new water connection. A road in South Oxfordshire will be closed for 5 days for a new water connection. A road closure notice says Thames Water will be installing a new connection in the road. Benson Parish Council said Sunnyside will be closed from the 15th to the 19th of September while Thames Water carries out a new connection. Access for residents and emergency services will be maintained where possible. Diversion via Littleworth Road, Watlington Road and Hale Road. Thank you for your patience. Since April 2025, Thames Water has replaced more than 100 kilometres of ageing water mains as part of the company's biggest upgrade to its network in 150 years. Police warning over derelict building sites. Police have issued a warning to trespassers over some extremely dangerous derelict buildings across Oxfordshire. A statement was released by Thames Valley Police highlighting the dangers of exploring such spaces. We have received reports of people, particularly young people, entering private land and derelict buildings across the area, said a spokesperson for the force. While some may see these locations as places to explore, derelict buildings can be extremely dangerous. Hidden hazards may include unstable structures, collapsed floors, broken glass, exposed wiring, asbestos, sharp objects, and unsecured shafts or openings. A serious injury or worse could occur in just a moment. Please remember, entering private land without permission may amount to trespass. Damaging property, forcing entry, breaking windows, graffiti, or other acts of vandalism are criminal offences and can result in prosecution for criminal damage. Entering a building as a trespasser and causing damage, stealing property, or intending to commit an offence may constitute burglary, which is a serious criminal offence. We ask parents and guardians to speak with their children about the dangers and consequences of entering abandoned or restricted sites. Equality Roadshow to visit 7 towns. A roadshow focused on promoting equality and raising awareness of council services will visit towns around the south of the county this autumn. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils will visit 7 towns across their districts, starting in Abingdon on Monday, September the 7th. The roadshow aims to engage with the public on how the councils support inclusive communities and promote equality through their services. Councillor Mike Giles, Cabinet Member for Corporate Services, Policy and Climate Action at South Oxfordshire District Council said, "Equality can mean so many different things to different people. In some way, the subject of equality affects us all, even if we're not aware of it. It's important that we are doing everything we can as an organisation to make sure our services are accessible and equal for everyone, and that our residents are aware of the support we can offer. I encourage anyone that can to come along and chat to our officers on the roadshow. The roadshow will offer information on getting active, disability support, bin collection assistance and other council services. Key programmes to be highlighted include Move Together and You Move with the council's Active Communities team. Financial support for people with disabilities and advice on council services will also be available. The roadshow will visit Abingdon Market on September the 7th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m, Didcot Market on September the 12th from 9 till 2, Wantage Market on September the 16th from 8 till 3, and Wallingford Market on September the 25th from 9 to 2. It will continue to Farringdon Market on October the 6th, Tame Market on October the 13th, and Henley Market on October the 22nd. Councillor Lucy Edwards, Cabinet Member for Corporate Services at Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "Off the back of the success of last year's roadshow, I'm pleased that we're able to get back on the road again and share the details of our services with residents and businesses, which we know was really useful on the last roadshows. Whether you need support due to a disability, are in need of help navigating our council services, having moved here from another country, or just want to speak to us about a matter concerning you, this roadshow is not only about us talking, but also listening. Our services are for everyone, and we are here to help. In July of this year, the councils reaffirmed their commitment to being welcoming and inclusive organisations for all, following the Equality and Human Rights Commission's recent revised Code of Practice.
Cost of Perimeter Road has increased. Didcot's long-promised Northern Perimeter Road has been delayed until 2029, with costs for the project increasing, according to a county councillor. The road will be delivered in two sections. The northern section, which will be delivered directly by Oxfordshire County Council, and the southern section, which Bloor Homes, the housing developer for the Lady Grove East development, is expected to complete. The County Council has developed designs for the northern section, which will comprise the northern junction and where it connects to the existing A4130 Abingdon Road and Lady Grove carriageways. The project's stated cost has risen by more than £2.5 million to about £14 million since an estimate last year, according to Didcot West County Councillor Ian Snowden, while £6.2 million of government infrastructure funding is finally about to be transferred to the County Council. On Thursday, September the 3rd, the County Council, the Highways Authority, will be asked to formally accept the £6.2 million of government grant funding. The £6.2 million was awarded to South Oxfordshire District Council in August 2017 to accelerate delivery of NPR3, the Northern Perimeter Road. 9 years later, the County Council is now only being asked to formally accept the funding. It will form part of total capital funding allocated to the £14.7 million cost of the Northern Perimeter Road, but the total cost of the entire Perimeter Road project is not yet known, as Bloor Homes is in charge of the southern section. Mr Snowden, Shadow Cabinet Member for the Environment and Economy, said it is extraordinary that £6.2 million of government money intended to support desperately needed infrastructure in Didcot has been sitting with one council while two Liberal Democrat-run authorities have taken more than 4 years to agree how to transfer it between themselves. During those 4 years, the houses haven't stopped being built. congestion hasn't disappeared and Didcot's need for infrastructure has only become greater. Mr. Snowden said in November last year, a county council's officer told him the northern section of the perimeter road was estimated to cost £12.1 million, but now the cost has risen to £14.7 million. About a year later, the figure has risen by about £2.5 million, while the planning application has slipped to winter 2026-27, construction to spring 2028, and completion to autumn 2029. A report for the Thursday's meeting describes MPR3 as the missing link, which will link the A4130 Abingdon Road and A413 Haddon Hill corridors. It says the scheme will provide an alternative route around Didcot, reduce congestion and support housing and economic growth. But the £14.7 million project being funded by the County Council does not deliver that complete connection. While the council is delivering the northern section, the southern section needs to be completed, the route, or needs to be complete to the route to Haddon Hill, and is being delivered separately by Bloor Homes. Inmate had prohibited phone in prison. A man has been sentenced after he was found with prohibited phones while an inmate at an Oxfordshire prison. Alan Adegbili was found with a mobile phone on two occasions while a prisoner at HMP Huntercombe near Wallingford. The 30-year-old of Dagnall Street, London, pleaded guilty to both offences. Leandra Smith, prosecuting, told the court Adegbili had a Zanko mobile phone in his cell on January the 26th and February the 24th this year. On the first occasion, Adegbili was in his cell with his cellmate during a mobile detection. Both men claimed there were no unauthorised items in the cell. However, Adegbili seemed agitated and put his hand in his dressing gown pocket. The phone was found and seized. Then on February 24th, his cell was searched again and he had his hand behind his back. Adegbili dropped the phone to the floor and it was seized. In police interview, he admitted he had the phone and claimed everyone on the wing used it. The court heard he has 16 previous convictions for 34 offences and was released on licence in June from a 12-year prison sentence. The court didn't hear what that prison sentence was for. The judge, recorder Anne Mulligan, handed Adegbili a 6-month prison sentence suspended for 12 months. He was ordered to complete 100 hours of unpaid work and he must attend 6 rehabilitation activity requirement days. Arrest follows indecent exposures. A man has been arrested in Didcot on suspicion of multiple exposure offences reported in the town recently. Thames Valley Police Neighbourhood Team for Didcot and Wallingford arrested a man on suspicion of exposure offences after a report of indecent exposure in the town on Monday, August the 24th. The arrest comes as part of an ongoing investigation into multiple reports of similar crimes in the area, and officers are working to find out if the offences are linked. A force spokesman said detectives and neighbourhood officers are continuing to work together to establish whether there are any links between the individual and other reported offences. As part of the ongoing inquiries, officers seized items for examination and the investigation remains active. At this stage, the individual remains in police custody. As criminal proceedings may follow, it would not be appropriate to comment further on the circumstances of the case or identify the person. We understand incidents of this nature can cause significant concern within the community. We would like to thank those who have come forward to report incidents and provide information to assist our investigation. Anyone who believes they may have witnessed a similar incident or who has information that may assist our inquiries is encouraged to contact Thames Valley Police via 101 or online, quoting the relevant incident number if it's known.
And now we have two nature articles. The first one, Hedgehog Support Amazing. A wildlife rescue centre caring for 153 sick or injured hedgehogs were blown away by the support they received for an appeal. Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue in Blueberry near Didcot rescues, rehabilitates and releases thousands of injured animals a year. It has been dealing with an influx of hedgehog patients. The charity said hedgehogs are one of their largest patient groups, and the 153 total is an incredible number. Supporters sent more than £2,600 worth of goods from the charity's Amazon wish list, including food, cleaning equipment and other emergency supplies, leaving the charity volunteers blown away. Oxfordshire's adders on brink of extinction. Oxfordshire's adder population is on the brink of extinction, conservationists have warned. Following the confirmed extinction of the species in neighbouring Warwickshire, concerns have been raised about the future of Britain's only venomous snake in Oxfordshire. Experts say the adder is now all but extinct in Oxfordshire, with records showing a sharp decline since 2000. The county's local nature recovery strategy indicates just one remaining population in the Chilterns, which was previously reintroduced. The last confirmed sighting in Oxfordshire was in 2015. The adder, known scientifically as Vipera berus, is considered very rare in the county. The local nature recovery strategy highlights several pressures on the species, including habitat loss, human disturbance, and predation by game birds. It has proposed measures to protect the remaining population, including creating and improving habitat mosaics and exploring reintroductions in the Chilterns or Cotswolds. Adders require a diverse mix of heathland, scrub and woodland edges to thrive, with warm areas for basking and sheltered spots for hibernation. Warwickshire Wildlife Trust confirmed the extinction of the adder in Warwickshire, where the last confirmed record was in 2004. The Trust's announcement has brought renewed attention to the adder's precarious position in the Midlands and central southern England.
Those two items of nostalgia bring us to the end of this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. So, wishing you well until next week, when hopefully you'll have a greater variation of readers' voices. From Kay and myself today, it's goodbye.